Very good morning to everyone. The first case on this morning's call is number 014001, the United States against Ramon Portales. Mr. Goldberger.
Yes, thank you. May it please the court, my name is Peter Goldberger, and it's my privilege this morning to represent the appellant, defendant Ramon Portales. I've asked if I might reserve a minute and a half for rebuttal. We have, in this case, a suppression issue and two sentencing issues, and I know better than to try to argue all of that in 10 minutes. I will like to talk about the suppression issue, and if I have a moment, touch on one of the sentencing points. The suppression issue calls upon the court to enforce the warrant clause of the Fourth Amendment. The marijuana in this case was discovered by opening paper packages. The paper packages were opaque. The packages were contained in wooden crates, and this evidence should have been suppressed rather than used at trial. The district court found that the packages were in plain view when seized. But what the court meant was that the wrapping of the packages was in plain view when seized. The court overlooked that to get to the marijuana itself, a further search was required. And that further search occurred when the agents then opened the packages, which they did without a warrant. This was illegal under Jacobson, Horton, and cases which the government does not really dispute, unless a warrant clause exception applied. The principal focus of the defense in the district court was that the packages in the crates were not in plain view. That was the issue at the hearing. But the defense did not forfeit or waive, as the government claims, the requirement that if they were in plain view, a warrant be required. This was mentioned only in passing, but it was raised in the district court.
How do you get around the government's argument that the government actually possessed the...
Right. That's the exception that they invoke, and that's exactly...
So how do you work,
where
how
we
do you
are.
Get around that?
We don't get around it. I mean, it applies or it doesn't apply according to the terms of that rule. That's the previous search controlled delivery rule of Andrea. And it applies unless it's a factual situation of whether it does apply or it doesn't. In this case, the Missouri trooper, I think his name was Cooper, had opened one package at the truck stop. They had unloaded the truck, they had found the secret compartment, and they opened the paper on one package. Trooper Cooper testified that Sergeant Cooper testified that he had looked inside, he recognized it, he rewrapped the package, put it back in the truck under the other packages. Didn't say he marked it in any way. They followed the truck to the warehouse. But because of the way the truck was parked, they can't see the truck being unloaded. And they don't. The task force, then the DEA gets called in, doesn't use Sergeant Cooper as part of the search force. He's back at the hotel, back at the motel with the informant, guarding the informant. The question is whether, when the agents saw the crates taken off the truck and decided that there was a risk of the contraband, which, as they believed it was, getting away, that they ought to arrest, go in and arrest then, that they could see and had a sufficient basis to believe that the wrapped packages in the crates, which the judge found they could see, were the same packages. And that is the factual point. What they saw was wrapped packages, which Agent Rodriguez, the DEA agent, said were in a common wrapped form. What's significant here is not common to believe that it might be marijuana, but common to believe it was the packages that had already been opened, only one of which had ever been opened. And since they hadn't been marked, since there was no distinctive identification of those packages, since the packages were described as being of a common nature of their packaging, there was no essentially continuous surveillance of the package. There was this break when they couldn't see what was coming on and off the truck. What came off the truck was in crates. It hadn't been in crates on at the truck stop. What was left was probable cause, yes, but not enough to believe that these were the same packages, not that is, what's inside the paper packages. It's always hard when you think about a warrant clause case to get away from the focus on probable cause. We're practical people. We think you could see it probably was marijuana. You could see it probably was even the same marijuana or the same kind of marijuana or marijuana from the same part of Mexico, perhaps, because of the kind of paper. But that's about the probable cause. We grant probable cause. The question is whether an exception to the warrant clause applied, even where there is probable cause, to authorize this search without a warrant. You know, the answer to that long answer, which is the whole argument on this subject, that of course got right to the heart of it, is the facts, which don't sufficiently show what amounts to the kind of continuous surveillance or essentially continuous surveillance of what can be identified as the same package that justifies the Andreas exception. Well, if there are not other questions on that, I will spend a moment on the sentencing point. Is the sentencing arguments, from the appellant's point of view, I think are really pretty simple, and especially from an appellate point of view. The district court didn't make the necessary and pertinent findings to support either of the challenged sentencing rulings in this case. Two rulings being that the safety valve did not apply, and that Mr. Portales was not a minor participant, as the defense claimed. As again, a fallback position. The defense also claimed that he principally claimed he was a minor minimal participant. That's a much larger reduction. We're not arguing that on appeal. But that argument included, as Judge Gettleman recognized, the lesser argument for minor participant, and that was rejected without the pertinent findings. The government's brief wants to re-argue the merits of those adjustments. The government's brief argues that they have a reason why Mr. Portales wasn't qualified for the safety valve, but it's a factual argument, and it's not one that the district court adopted. It's one that they made in the district court, but it's not the reason given by the district judge, and he did give a reason. The reason he gave was not pertinent. It was a reason about that really applied to the criteria for acceptance of responsibility. I think he just lost track of what he was focusing on at that moment. You can't deny a safety valve adjustment without identifying one of the five criteria for the safety valve, and that doesn't apply to the defendant. And while the government had an argument and tries to make that argument to this court, I think inappropriately,
anybody's ever got a safety valve adjustment, downward adjustment, who denied criminal involvement in the activity?
Oh, absolutely. Somebody has gotten an every adjustment. I mean, what the mistake, and I don't mean to make light of your question. I understand the question, but the point is that it's misleading to look at appellate case law as your basis for seeing what district judges might do in their fact-finding discretion, in their fact-finding authority and their due deference authority under 3742E. And these things happen in the district court all the time. If the judge had said, for this reason or that reason that relates to one of, this is why I think it relates to one of the five criteria, then we wouldn't even be here. But I'm saying the government is trying to argue on a basis that you can't argue in the Court of Appeals. Is that a fair answer to the question? I hope that's a fair answer to the question. Could the judge have reasonably done what I'm saying we want to send it back for him to do or explain why not? Yes. Yes. You can meet the safety valve criteria if you, this is the fifth prong, tell the government all that you know about your criminal involvement and related criminal activity. And it's not the same as accepting responsibility. There's a lot of overlap, it's not the same, and there are a million factual permutations. That's why district judges have this authority and the Court of Appeals doesn't. With respect to minor participant, again, the application note requires a comparative analysis. No comparative analysis was done. It has to be remanded. This court cannot make that analysis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goldberger. We'll hear now from Ms. Tui.
May it please the Court, Elise Tui on behalf of the United States. defendant has raised three issues in this appeal, and the court did not err a single time. It is the controlled delivery extension of the plain view doctrine set forth in the U.S. Supreme Court, Illinois versus Andreas, that clearly provides that Mr. Portales had no privacy interest in the marijuana. The facts of this case support the judge's decision not to grant the motion to suppress. Here, the agents were able to seize this marijuana lawfully in Missouri. That marijuana was brought up under law enforcement control to Illinois, and it remained under law enforcement control until the tractor trailer containing the marijuana was delivered to the defendant, Mr. Portales.
When the tractor trailer was examined in Missouri,
that's correct.
How many of these packages were open? I gather there were quite a few of these packages aboard the truck. How many of them were open?
That's correct. There was one that was open. As Agent Cooper testified, Officer Cooper testified, the tractor trailer was such that when you opened the back of the trailer, there were a large quantity of lime boxes. He was able to climb over the top of those lime boxes and reach a hidden compartment that was actually all the way in the front of the trailer. He opened that compartment and looked inside. Inside were numerous multicolored wrap packages of marijuana. He did not empty those, but simply took one, slid it open, examined its contents, then resealed it and hid it back within the other packages because he did not wish to change how the contents of the trailer appeared and raise any suspicion at the time of the controlled delivery. So no counting was done. However, there was a sort of general description and a sense of the contents of that hidden compartment that Officer Cooper relayed to the DEA agent.
Now, when the tractor trailer arrived at its ultimate destination and was observed by the law enforcement agents, could you walk me through factually exactly what happened?
Yes, Your Honor. The tractor trailer was delivered to the site on the night before the controlled delivery. DEA agents maintained constant surveillance and were able to observe that that tractor trailer was not touched until the next morning. On the morning of January 26th, the defendant, Mr. Portales, and a number of other co-conspirators arrived at the warehouse. Defendant Portales and his co-conspirators then started to unload the tractor trailer. And the way they did that is the tractor trailer was moved forward, the back doors of the trailer were opened, and then the tractor trailer was driven up to the loading dock. Mr. Portales then, using a forklift, began to drive on and off the tractor trailer, and the agents could observe from where they were located that Mr. Portales was driving off all of the boxes of lime that were on the trailer.
Okay, these were the boxes the agent had crawled over.
That's correct.
Down in Missouri.
Yes.
Okay.
After those lime boxes were unloaded, while that was occurring, there was also a truckload of lumber that had arrived at the warehouse. That lumber was unloaded also by the defendant, Mr. Portales, into his warehouse. And those things sort of happened, I can't say which happened first or second, but those happened sort of in the morning of January 26th. After all of the boxes appeared to have been unloaded, Mr. Portales and the co-conspirators went on to the tractor trailer, and a long extension cord, it appeared, was brought onto the tractor trailer. Shortly thereafter, Mr. Portales drove these three large makeshift wooden crates onto the trailer.
Now, were these the same kind of crates that we used to transport the lime?
No, they are different. The limes were actually boxes that were located on pallets. The crates were makeshift crates made of lumber. There was lumber that had been delivered earlier that had been unloaded by Defendant Portales that morning. Makeshift crates of lumber were then driven by Defendant Portales onto the trailer. All the co-conspirators at the scene were then seen climbing into the trailer. A period of time passed. The co-conspirators got off, and then Mr. Portales was observed driving the three large wooden crates off of the tractor trailer. Within 5 minutes, DEA agents moved in to secure the premises and make arrests. And the district court found that the law enforcement agents had probable cause to do that. They entered the warehouse. They secured the warehouse. Defendant Portales specifically was arrested right outside the warehouse standing near an empty tractor trailer. That's what the evidence showed. And then just inside the warehouse, there were three wooden crates. Inside those wooden crates were packages that were the same packages that had been unloaded from the tractor trailer.
Officer Cooper wasn't at that scene, was he?
He was not.
At the warehouse scene. Was he the person who crawled over the crates in Missouri? And
yes.
Missouri? Is he the only one?
He is the only one.
Does it make any difference that he was the identifier in Missouri but not in wherever this was, the warehouse?
I would argue that it makes no difference for two reasons. It makes no difference, the first reason being that the knowledge of one law enforcement officer is imputed to others. And in addition to that, the testimony showed that Officer Cooper described what he had observed to the DEA agents. Second, and what Mr. Portales' counsel overlooked, is there was no other marijuana found in that warehouse. The agents went in and secured the warehouse and found marijuana. There was no other marijuana. There was never any suggestion at any point. There's no evidence that there was any other marijuana at that warehouse. And, in fact, during oral argument on the motion to suppress, which was actually not focused on seizing these packages, but was focused on the marijuana, whether the marijuana had been sort of repackaged and sealed inside crates that, therefore, the defendant argued were not in plain view. The defense attorney argued to the trial court that with respect to the sort of initial probable cause, maybe you could hypothesize, you know, he raised the issue of maybe you could hypothesize that there was other marijuana, but he specifically said, and it's on page 8 of the transcript of that hearing, which, of course, was not the case. It was not the case. There was no other marijuana. This was the only marijuana. This was the marijuana that law enforcement agents had properly seized and searched in Missouri, and as a result, they were re-seizing and searching packages that defendant Portales did not have any privacy interest in. And in fact, defense counsel in its brief at the trial court acknowledged that, and I'm quoting, if the marijuana was found on the warehouse floor wrapped in paper, the government's claim that it was merely re-seizing the evidence might have merit. But that wasn't their concern. That wasn't defense counsel's concern in the trial court, so no one was focusing on that issue. And that's why the government in its appeal argues there was waiver, because under precedent, not precedent, but relevant cases in the 1st, 9th, and 10th Circuit, not only can you completely waive suppression by failing to file a motion at all, but if you fail to raise a particular ground, that constitutes a waiver. And the defense's citation of this court's decision in U.S. versus Bradford is not applicable, because in that case, the government, unlike the government here, did not raise waiver. We have raised waiver. But this court, if it does not want to get to the waiver issue, need not, because the facts clearly support that there was one set of marijuana packages found in Mr. Portales' warehouse that had previously been seized and searched and therefore were properly re-seized and searched under the Andreas Doctrine.
When they bought these three, wooden cartons or wooden whatever they were, when they put them on the truck after unloading the line, were they obviously empty?
When they were loaded onto the trailer? The law enforcement agents could not tell that. There was a significant enough distance from the tractor trailer that they could not see inside those crates.
Did they unload those after being in there a while? I don't understand the extension cord, but whatever that has to do with anything.
The extension cord being something that was used to attach some sort of mechanism that would, and this was for purposes of probable cause to go in, would be able to help them open up the sealed compartment either by a light or tools to open up the sealed compartment.
This compartment that the officer Cooper found initially was sealed?
That's correct.
And he had to break into it or do something?
That's correct. It had to be, and this evidence came out of trial, it was a sealed area in which there were screws, one panel was screwed. It was the refrigerator compartment, actually, of the trailer, and that had been sort of sealed off, and inside, behind this fake wall, was the quantity of marijuana that we're talking about here. And we're talking about a substantial quantity, almost 3,000 pounds of marijuana. And there was only one, there was a very large quantity that Officer Cooper observed inside the tractor trailer, and there was only one set of marijuana packages found at the scene, and those were the marijuana packages that were inside the crates. No other marijuana was found on the trailer or anywhere else.
Thank you, Ms. Tui.
Thank
Your time
you.
Has expired. You have a minute left, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate Ms. Tui's factual recitation, which I want to say was entirely accurate, so perfectly accurate, and very informative. We agree and assume that the DEA knew and is deemed to know what Officer Cooper knew from having crawled over the crates. We accept that principle and haven't disputed it. The government has never argued before this moment, and I haven't had a chance to recheck the record entirely about this, that an important inference about these packages in the crate being the same package should be drawn from the fact that no other marijuana was found and that it was a large quantity. But the government has not argued here that this fact was known before the packages were opened without a warrant. That is, had the whole warehouse been searched and then the packages opened, or were the packages opened and, which I think is the case, and then later, which would not contribute to an Andreas inference, that it was only learned later. If I may, just one tiny point, that the reply about what the defense said in the district court, we discussed this extensively in our reply brief, and I call the court's attention to it. The government's quote omits the adjacent sentence, which shows that the defense was talking about seizure there, and understood that there was also the warrant requirement for a search, which is what we're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you. And we want to thank both Mr. Goldberger and Ms. Tui for their fine briefs and oral arguments today, and the case will be taken under advisement.